This is a message by Bob Vernon, former Assistant Chief of Police in Los Angeles, California. It consists of two interviews of Mr. Vernon, the first in 1992, followed by an update explaining God's current work in his life, given in 1998.
My father was a soldier in World War I, assigned to the 4th Division, Company C of the 11th Machine Gun Battalion. He said it was an unusual assignment because in World War I, a machine gun was a major war device, one that was feared, one that could literally mow down hundreds of the enemy as they came forward. And so as a result, Dad said, you know, we didn't have any friends. He said the Germans didn't like us. And he said our own troops didn't like to see us come in. When we'd come in with our machine gun and set it up, and he was a machine gunner, trained to... I have a picture of him and his graduates, fellow classmates, as they graduated from the machine gunner school. There were over 200 of them. Only 7 of them made it through the war. It was a grueling, horrible war, that trench warfare. My father was wounded severely at Chattahoochee. He died young because he was gassed with mustard gas after he took some shrapnel and was unconscious when the Germans mounted a counterattack. Why am I telling you all this? A machine gun drew a lot of fire. Dad said they could get away with just maybe a few minutes of fire before they would have to move or dig deeper into the ground because the artillery shells would come. I'm here to warn you that you are being so effective for the cause of Christ that you are modern day prophets calling the nation back to God. And whenever you're effective in doing that, and you certainly are, you're going to take fire. So get ready for it. And you know what? You won't only have antagonism from the bad guys. You'll even have some Christians that will want to move away from you because they don't want to get close to the fire. You have to be ready for that. You have to know that. I had a little taste of that after the Rodney King incident. And I'm not going to go into everything that's in the book. I'm going to make you buy the book. You get an employee's discount, so you do that. But in the book, I talk about the Rodney King incident. I was acting chief of police when that happened. I didn't like what I saw. That's the understatement of the year. I immediately ordered a criminal and a internal investigation. And the fallout that resulted from that was that it was pretty evident after just a few weeks that Chief Gates would be on his way out. That became very evident. And there was an article that appeared in Los Angeles Magazine. It was called "The Dan Quayle Principle Strikes Again." And it said this: those who are anxious to get rid of Darrell Gates ought to see who's standing in the wings to take over. It's one Robert L. Vernon, who has very strange religious beliefs. And then they listed three things, all of which were really perversions of what I had said. They got some tapes that had been made 14 years prior. I still believe what I said on the tapes. I'm not apologizing for them. I stand with what I said on the tapes. They're from the Word of God. But they made a perversion of what I said. They said, well, the closest they got to it, they said he believes that homosexuality is a sin. That's true. He said he believes that women should submit to men. That's wrong. I quoted from the Bible about the husband-wife relationship, and I quoted both sides how it's a mutual submitting to others. The husband should even submit to the point of death, of being willing to die. And it's who can submit the most to the other. You know, it's a mutual relationship. And so they were wrong on that one. And then they said, and he also believes in beating children. Of course, they were wrong there too. But they were very clever. They took a phrase that I had used on a tape where I was talking about a father who had been really unfaithful to his son in not keeping a promise. And he provoked his son to wrath, and his son became rebellious. And I was role-playing the father, and I said, so what did the father say? The father said, if you got a rebel, you got to break him. If you got to beat him to break him, you beat him. And so they took my words when I was saying what the father said, and they said, here's what Chief Vernon thinks about raising children. And they had that quote. And I went on, of course, on the tape to say, who was wrong in this scenario? It was a father who was wrong, not the son. But they didn't say that, of course. And my reputation was severely damaged. I have not been able to get a job in police work because of it. I applied for the one here just north of Denver, and they didn't even interview me. You see, because I'm a religious kook. I believe in weird things. I now know a little bit of what it means when Solomon said under the inspiration of God that a good name is better than gold and silver, yea, precious stones. I know what it's like to see my name and picture across the nation in newspapers as some kind of weirdo. And I even have Christian friends who have heard that statement that was played on the radio, and they said, you know, we know you've denied it, but we heard it with your own mouth, Vernon. We heard you say it. And I try to explain what they did, and sometimes it's hard. You can't explain to everybody, and pretty soon you get tired of explaining, and you just realize that, unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there that don't understand. And I have to confess something to you. I not only got depressed, and I only got sorrowful about this, I got angry at God, and that wasn't right. And I want to share with you in the closing 5 minutes I have briefly some principles that I learned through this time of trial. Principles that you need to learn because you will face times of trial. It's from Psalms 37. It's a familiar passage, and there are four principles there. The setting is that David is looking at evil men, and he is seeing how they are prospering, and he's angry. And the Lord speaks to him and says, "Fret not because of the evil man and the way he prospers." And rather, the Lord gives him instruction. He says, number one, in times of trial like this, David, trust in me. My son and I went down the Colorado River on a raft. They have over 100 rapids through the Grand Canyon. Lava Falls is usually the most violent one. You drop 37 vertical feet and 75 feet. It's pretty violent. But the most violent was one called Kermit Falls. For some reason, that was more violent the time we went through because of the level of the water, something I can't understand it. And as we approached Kermit Falls, the raft master, Robin, he had a euphemism. He would say, "This is going to be a good one." We all knew what that really meant was, "We're all going to die." You know, I mean, it was bad. And as we approached the falls, he turned the raft sideways. And we started down the rapids sideways. And just for an instant of time, I was tempted to jump from the raft. Robin and I had been talking for the last 3 days about some problems in his life, and I thought, great Scott, he wants to die and he's taking all of us with him. Fortunately, I didn't jump. And then I realized as I heard the Evinrude engine going to peak performance at the back of the raft, he had gone down sideways on purpose. There was a rock that had tumbled down from the banks of that great canyon and was jagged, sticking up in the center of the river, and he had to have the raft positioned sideways so the full power of the motor could push us around that rock. Robin knew what he was doing. If I had jumped from that raft, I would have been drowned. No question about it. Don't jump from the raft. God knows what he's doing. He says, "David, in times when it looks like I'm doing something weird, I've got you sideways, your reputation's been ruined, you're depressed, you're wondering, what am I doing to you? David, trust in me." Secondly, David, he says, delight in the Lord. A lot of people misunderstand that. They say, delight in the situation. It doesn't say that there, at least. It says, delight in the Lord. If you can kind of visualize with me here, two positions. Right here is quicksand. That's my emotions. Right behind the quicksand, this level right here, there's a rock. You know who that rock is? God. You know when I stand on my emotions where I go? Down. But you know when I delight in the Lord and recognize who He is, His nature, the omnipotent, the omniscient, the loving Savior who went to the cross, when I realize who He is and I step back from my emotions on that rock and I delight in Him, regardless of the situation, things begin to look different. Thirdly, he says, commit your way to me, and I'll give you the desires of your heart. Remember the setting now. It's in the time of tribulation. David is fretting because of the evildoers and because of the trouble he's going through. Bob and I left on that Colorado trip from a place called Lee's Ferry. And as we pushed off, somebody uttered these words. I forget who it was. There were 18 of us on the raft. Somebody said, "Well, we're committed." We were on that raft for 8 days. The third night, we stopped at a place for the night, and we set up our camp, and Bob and I got under some bushes because it looked like it was raining. We put a little tarp over the bushes, and about 3 o'clock in the morning, I heard, "Hey!" And I set up, and Bob was sitting there, and he had something in his hands, and he was throwing it off into the bushes. I said, "What was that?" He said, "Oh, Dad." He said, "It was one of those tree lizards." They had great big lizards, this long, that fat, and they kind of waddle like a big alligator, you know. One had climbed up in the bush and fell down, and he said, "Dad, it hit on my face and I was sleeping with my mouth open." Now, I got to tell you, of the 18 people on board that raft, by the third day, there were some that had enough. But guess what? That was too bad. They were committed. There's no way to get out of that canyon. You go through it. The Lord says, you know, in times of trouble, don't have second thoughts about where you are. Just commit your way to me. I'll give you the desires of your heart if you do that. Don't think about getting out of it. Commit yourself to me. I've learned that. I've learned it the hard way, but I'm learning it. And the final principle that I'm learning, this is the toughest one. He says, rest in me. Don't fret. And then he says something else. Don't get angry. I had to confess my anger. God, you know what you're doing. You're omnipotent. You're omniscient. You love me. I don't know what you're doing. You got the raft sideways. But Lord, I trust you. I delight in you, not in the situation. In you, I delight in you. I'm committing my way. I'm not thinking about hiking out of the canyon. I'm here. Now, God, I'm just resting. And as we've gone through the book of Psalms, guess what word we've seen more than any other word? It's one that I almost hate to see. It's the word, wait. No, Lord, now, today, zap those turkeys, you know? And he says, wait. At the right time, I want to close by just reading these words. I have seen a wicked man overbearing. These are the last few verses of the chapter. And towering like a cedar of Lebanon, again I passed by, and lo, he was no more. Though I sought him, he could not be found. Mark the blameless man and behold the upright, for there is posterity for the man of peace. But transgressors shall be altogether destroyed. The posterity of the wicked shall be cut off. The salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. He is their refuge in the time of trouble. The Lord helps them and delivers them. He delivers them from the wicked and saves them because they take their refuge in him. Folks, you get ready for trial. You get ready for tribulation. You trust and you delight and you commit and then you rest.
That was the end of the 1992 message. We are now continuing with Mr. Vernon's 1998 update.
The last time I was here, I was talking about this whole issue of being on the whitewater, and it ended up in one of Doctor's books, with my permission, of course. I was honored to have him select that as one of the stories. But if you'll recall the story, it's where you're not sure what's going on. You're in the middle of turbulence, and you have a choice. Do you stay on the raft or do you bail out? Fortunately, I decided to stay on the raft because it didn't make sense what God was doing, but I knew God and I know God. And I decided I'm staying with Him, even if it looks like things aren't going well for me. You know, we're deceived easily about this whole relationship with God. Even by well-meaning people, they tell you something like this. If you just become a Christian, everything's going to be okay. Everything will be fine. Well, in the ultimate sense, of course, that's true. Things are going to end up all right. But sometime between here and there, there's some white water. And, you know, I like to tell a story that indicates why we're deceived so easily. We get deceived easily when we are drawn away because of our own wants and desires and our own sinful nature. That's what it says in James. God doesn't tempt us. God doesn't draw us away. We are drawn away because of ourselves, our own sinful nature. I was working dope. I wanted to arrest a guy who was selling narcotics around a school. I tried to get a search warrant from a judge. He wouldn't give us a search warrant. So we decided, well, we'll just go up and knock on a door and see if the guy answers. And maybe we'll learn something when he answers the door. I mean, occasionally that works. I mean, I've actually gone up and knocked on the door, identified myself, narcotics officer. Do you have any dope here? Once in a while, the guy says, yeah. And then you say, well, would you mind getting it for us? Okay. And they go bring it out, you know. I mean, I have to admit, it happens in less than 5% of the time, but it does happen. So I thought, well, it's worth a go. So we went up, we hit the buzzer, the guy opens the door. He's smoking a joint. Now, even in California, that's still probable cause. You know? So I jerked off the screen door from the hook, and I reached in. He was trying to get it in his mouth and chew it up, and I got half of it away from him and folded it into one of my FI cards, put it in my pocket, and I said, you're under arrest. Turn him around. And as I was hooking him up, I'm looking over his shoulder, and right behind him in the house is a coffee table with a bunch of narcotics on it, all packaged for sale. So I said to my partner, we don't want to foul this up, so we better make a phone call to the DA, see if we can get a telephonic search warrant, make sure everything is legal here. So far, we're okay, but if we go any further, it might be illegal. So I reached for the phone that was on the same table with the narcotics, and it rang before my hand got to it. So I figured, well, you never know, I may learn something here. I pick up, and I said, yeah. I didn't want to say too much, you know. And voice on the other side said, who is this? Well, I don't think real fast, so I said, Bob. That's my real name, you know. He said, oh, hi, Bob, this is Davey. Right name, you know. Except he figured out that it wasn't the same Bob, I guess, because he said, hey, Bob, your voice sounds a little different. What's going on there? I thought, oh, he's onto it. I said, well, some guys are getting loaded here, which once again was telling the truth. Some guys were getting loaded. He said, oh, you guys are having a party. I said, well, you could put it that way. He said, can I make the scene? I said, yeah, Davey, why don't you come on over? Started to hang up the phone. I got it about halfway down. I could hear his voice. Bob! I pulled it back up. I said, yeah. He said, do you want me to bring my stash? Yeah, Davey, why don't you bring your stash? Hung up the phone. A few minutes goes by. Car pulls up. The guy's all excited. He comes running up, you know. I kind of help him into the house, take away the sack from him, which contained a bunch of narcotics and paraphernalia. And as I'm hooking him up, I said, you must be Davey. And I'll never forget the look on his face and the tone of his voice. He's looking over his shoulder. You must be Bob. Now, the reason I tell you this story is for an important reason. You see, this man was deceived. We are deceived many times because of what we want to believe about God. God didn't promise his disciples really an easy life. On the contrary, he said, in this cosmos, in this world, you will have tribulation. It's axiomatic. But I found something interesting, even though during this time of being in the white water, you know, I was holding on logically to God, I have to confess to you something. In my emotion, there were moments when I said, God, what are you doing? Emotionally, I was a basket case for a while. But God was there, and he led me to some verses I want to share with you this morning. Would you turn quickly to Romans, the 5th chapter? I'm going to read them to you, starting with verse 3. And we not only know this, but we also exult in our tribulation. Stop right there for a moment. He says, we get happy and we exult about our tribulation. Why? He explains. Knowing that tribulation brings about perseverance. I looked that word up in the Greek, and I'm not a Greek student, but my pastor has taught me to use a couple books, you know, and I got Vine's Dictionary of New Testament Greek Words, and I got the Interlinear Greek, and I looked that up, and the word that's translated perseverance or endurance is the word hupomene. Hupo meaning under, mene meaning to remain. It literally means to remain under. If you can kind of get a word picture, here's this heavy weight, and I'm on it, and the temptation is, this is heavy, I'm out of here. But you know, you have to go through that if you're going to work up to the next thing. Don't get ahead of me now. But let's talk about what is endurance. One night, 3 o'clock in the morning, two of my guys going down Brooklyn Avenue, a gas station, 3 o'clock. They see movement. They hit it with a spotlight. There's a couple guys working on some tires that they have, you know, behind the accordion-type metal thing to protect the tires. They're trying to open that up to steal some tires. When the cops hit them with a light, they both break and run. The officers go after the guy that had the crowbar. He drops it. He's going down Mott Street. And he turns around. They said, we never saw it coming because it was such a small gun. It was a 25 automatic. All of a sudden, pa, pa, pa. They said it sounded like firecrackers. One of the officers took a round right under his vest into his stomach. Now, we tell officers, when you take a stomach wound, the best thing you can do is sit down, try to be calm. You have to keep your blood pressure down if you can. You have to keep your pulse rate down if you can. You don't want to bleed out. There's some major arteries there, including the femoral and the aorta coming down. There's all kinds of things there. Be easy. Try not to bleed out till we can get help for you. So the officer went down. His partner kept running. There was a running gun battle, and suddenly the officer that was chasing him realized, I'm out in the street with no protection and the bad guy's behind a telephone pole. And just as he was realizing his predicament, he heard a weak voice off to his right on the lawn saying, hey, you! And pow, a gun go off, a .38 special, and he realized it was his partner. And the man, because of his partner being there, moved around the telephone pole. Now he was vulnerable to the officer in the street. He took careful aim and got a bullet into the guy and ended the gunfight. But the young officer who was hit in the stomach was in bad shape. We had to get him in a pressure suit. I wasn't there when I say we, the police. They got him to the emergency hospital. And it wasn't until the next morning when I was at the scene that we knew he was out of trouble. At the hospital, the sergeant came out of the room. And this old sergeant was a hard-bitten sergeant, and I couldn't understand why he had tears in his eyes. I thought the officer had died, and I said, did he pass away? He said, no, he's going to make it. And I said, what's this for, Sarge? He said, well, once I found he was going to make it, I chewed him out. I said, you chewed him out? He said, yeah, he shouldn't have got up and ran. He ran over 100 yards. Almost lost him because of that. And I said, what's that about then? He said, well, when I told him and chewed him out, he looked back up at me and he said, but Sarge, you don't understand. My partner needed me. He said he was willing to do whatever was necessary, including giving his life, because his partner needed him. Hey, folks, that's endurance. Going gets rough, you don't give up. You hang in there. And then what happens? Read it. In endurance, proven character. The word that's translated proven character originally came from a Greek word that was used to indicate a stamping of a craftsman mark on a piece of leather or wood or whatever it was. You know, boom, you'd hit your mark. If you were really proud of your work, you'd ding. It's kind of like today, you know, the UL underwriter's lab thing or the good housekeeping seal of approval. It meant something. And what he's talking about here is in order to get to the point of having proven character, you have to go through endurance. And you know, when you go through endurance, God, boing, stamps you. Proven character. We had two officers shot down in our Newton division. I was asked to come down there because both of them were possibly fatal wounds. They had come up to a bedroom where a guy who had really gone crazy, taken off all his clothes and was wandering around through the streets, shooting with a rifle at people and anything that moved. And when the police got there, he ran back into his house, went into his bedroom. His mother forgot to tell the officers there were two doors to the bedroom. So the officers were trying to talk him out. They were trying not to do it with force. And they were talking through the door, and unbeknownst to them, he came up behind them and shot both of them in the back with a rifle. One of them took a round through his neck, went through his neck, missed his spine by about a quarter of an inch. I went to the hospital on my way in. I saw that the officers were okay, they were going to make it, and I quickly went over. On the way, I'm on the radio, and I'm communicating with the field commander, and I asked him if SWAT had been called out, because they told me over the radio, we have the suspect isolated. He's on the grounds of Jefferson High School. We have a perimeter set around. I said, have you got SWAT there? They said, no. I said, get SWAT. As I arrived and pulled up, the SWAT Huey helicopter was landing, and the officers were bailing out, and the lieutenant came running over to me. You know, the SWAT guys, they're all in their black gear with their black helmets and all that, and they look really bad, you know. And he came over and he said, what is the mission, sir? And I said, well, I want you to arrest the suspect. He said, arrest him? What if he shoots at us? I said, well, I don't want any more officers shot. But if you can get him without killing him, I want you to take him alive. The man's probably crazy. Oh, we can do that. Is that what you want? I said, that's what I want. Yes, sir. The man who was saying that was Lieutenant Jeff Rogers, carefully picked for that position. He went over double time to his platoon. Soon they were deployed. 10-15 minutes later, I heard a couple rifle shots from the suspect. I could tell the difference. Bam, bam. And then I heard boom, boom. The barking of the shotguns of SWAT. And then the radio crackled. Mission accomplished, sir. No officers compromised. I was sure he was dead. Pretty soon Jeff Rogers came over to the command post. I said, did you have to kill him? Oh, no, sir. You told us you wanted him alive. We had to shoot him in both legs, but he's alive. Now, this may not mean much to you, but to a group of officers who know that this man has shot and possibly killed some brother officers and then shoots at them, that's what we would call a highly emotionally charged situation. The temptation would be to shoot, to kill. And of course, they would have been in their right to do that. He's shooting at them. They can shoot in self-defense. Why did they not do that? Lieutenant Rogers was such a well-disciplined, well-trained, well-proven man that he could be placed with that kind of responsibility. He had passed the test before. He was there. You know, many times God has to put us through situations like that so we can get the stamp. And then what does that result in? Well, the stamp results in hope. You see it? Proven character results in hope. I got to tell you, when I was here last time, my hope was pretty much down here. Intellectually, I knew where God was. I knew He was in control. I knew He loved me. But I have to confess something to you. There was one night in particular, I'll never forget, I was reading through the Psalms. The Psalms happen to minister to me when I'm really hurting. Jim and Shirley, I just love, Esther and I just love the Psalms. And we were reading in Psalms, happened to be Psalms 27. I got near, at the end verse, you know what it said? It said, wait. Wait, I say in the Lord. And I remember slamming the Bible shut and throwing it on the bed and looking up toward God in heaven and shouting, God, I'm tired of waiting. They're making a fool of me. They're calling me a liar. They've destroyed my reputation. It's all over with me. Where are you? That was a sin, folks. And I confess that to you. I'm embarrassed to tell you this. Not more than 3 minutes after I did that, I felt so stupid. I was on my knees and I was pouring my heart out to God with tears, asking Him to please forgive me. that I knew he was in control. I didn't understand what he was doing, but he was doing something I knew intellectually. It was just my emotions weren't there. Well, guess what? I was invited, and I don't have time to tell you the story, but I was invited to go on a tour in Europe, in the Western European nations, on a tour for CBMC, and I did that. And at the end, I asked if I could please go to the Czech Republic. My mother came from the Czech Republic. I wanted to visit my roots. And after a series of circumstances, which once again are too long to relate here, the police commissioner wanted to meet me. I walked into the office of Stanislav Novotny. And as I'm walking in, my host, Heinrich Minder from Switzerland, said, "The proposal you heard Jeff Skipperidge from England made to the military, you will make to Mr. Novotny for the police." I said, "Henry, I don't have a 3-day seminar on Christian ethics." "That's okay. You make the recommendation. If he says yes, you make one up." I found myself making a proposal. I found the guy accepting it. And quickly I had to go home and come up with this deal. And I went back, and I've now been to the Czech Republic 3 times. It spread to Hungary. Russia heard about it. They asked me to come to Russia. I've been to the National Police Academy in Russia. Guess what? Not only am I allowed to present the Christian ethic and philosophy, they let me share my testimony. Can't do that in America. There's another verse I want to share with you, 2 Corinthians 3:12. It says that once you have hope, you become bold. I'm in China. I'm meeting with the top-ranking officials of the Chinese police. I'm talking about communist China, Beijing. And after a long luncheon, the general began asking me questions. And then finally he said, "Now I have a difficult question for you, general." They all call me general there. I say, "I'm not a general." "No, there are 3 stars on your badge." I said, "That's a police insignia. How many men did you command?" 8,000. "You're a general." I said, "Okay, we'll get over that." "All right, general," he said, "what do you think about the charge that my country is stealing intellectual property?" I said, "First, I must give the general an ancient proverb. Better are wounds from a friend than kisses from an enemy." When that was translated, he went, "Caw." I found out if you're real high up there in the cold, you can growl a little bit. The lower guys don't growl, but the top guys, "Caw," you know. I said, "The reason I have given that general the proverb is I'm about to wound him." I said, "General, I believe that you have almost absolute power as police. We don't have that absolute power in the States. If you have absolute power, then you could be doing something about this theft of intellectual property, the computer chips, the CDs, all those things that are alleged." I said, "You know, in my opinion, what you're doing is what we call in English winking the eye. You are allowing it to happen. That is my opinion, and I think most Americans who understand the problem feel the same way I do. That is the truth, sir." He looked at me and kind of a shocked look on his face, and then he made 3 statements that were each separately translated by the translator, and the first one, "The United States of America," and he said something very negative. "And your country," the second one, it was just as negative. "And the third one, and America," and I started to get mad. And I stopped him before he said the fourth one. I said, "Wait, tell the general I'm an American, I love my country, I pray to God that if it ever came down to this, I'd have the courage to die for my country. You tell the general that before he continues." And the translator said, "You want me to tell him that?" I said, "Yes, tell him." And so he told him. And the general, he looked at me, you know. And then he got up, and there was a kind of a slight smile on his face, and he made a statement, and he walked out of the room. And I said, "What has happened?" And the translator said, "The general says the seminar you would like to present on the Christian ethic is approved for September of this year." And my colleague Matthias Lehmann from German, who helps me present these seminars, says, "Herr Gunherel, you have passed the test." And then he told me earlier, later on, he says, one of the examples I gave him of our whole seminar was the slide on loyalty. "I think you were being tested about your loyalty. Now we have been asked to go back. We've already done 1 seminar for them and actually 2. We're asked to come back now, and guess what they've asked us? We like those ancient proverbs you use and those ancient principles you say you got from the Hebrews, the 10-something. I said, "Oh, yeah, the 10 commandments. Are those documented somewhere?" "Yes." "Can you bring those with you next time?" I said, "Well, I'll be honest with you, they're in the Bible. Can you bring 200 Bibles for the attendees of the seminar? And they are sincerely interested. And you know, my evaluation of the Chinese people has gone up a lot of notches because of my relationship and because their openness to consider new things. Now, the final thing. You know, my sadness was, and my heart was broken, because I thought my reputation in the United States was all over. I was out of the profession I loved. I was out of the department I loved. I cannot put in words the despair that I felt on having a dream die. Have you ever experienced the death of a dream? My dream was to be the chief, not because I wanted the position, because I wanted to bring healing to L.A. And that is never to be. But you know what God has done? The IACP, the International Association of Chiefs of Police, heard about what was happening in these other countries. And they said, can you present a seminar here in the States to show us what you're doing overseas? And so I did that. And guess what? Now the chiefs of the United States are asking me to come. Last Friday, I was in Northern California. This has been approved officially by the state of California, my course. The only thing I have to do is I have to dismiss the class and have an elective for those who want to hear about God. Guess what? Always a minimum of 80% stay to hear about God. This has been given to you, hopefully, as an encouragement. You're in despair, or you're about to be there. I want to remind you what God's Word says. We exult in our tribulations, knowing that tribulation brings about perseverance, perseverance, proven character, hope. And hope does not disappoint, because the love of God has been poured out within our hearts through the Holy Spirit who was given to us. I'm embarrassed to tell you that logically, I was with God, but emotionally, there were times when I doubted. But I'm here to tell you by testimony, God does not make mistakes. God closed the city, but He opened the world.
For other messages by Bob Vernon, you can contact Firefighters for Christ at 4 Santa Maria, Foothill Ranch, California, 92610.